Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Podcast starts now officially. This is the official start of the podcast. And I have to say, I feel great about it.
Good.
Yeah, because, you know, we were both going to start and we were both a little trepidatious about it. And, you know, sort of an unnameable sort of fear of starting. But
well, this
we're diving in.
Is primarily about different ways two people can be as far away from each other as possible. you'd think the only two ways for two people to talk in this day and age are either on Zoom or in person, but you would be so wrong. I would not even know where to begin.
It is so offensive to think that those are the only two ways to talk to a person, because we are inventing such amazing new ways to be able to talk to a person who's really, really far away.
I would say we are inventing different ways that almost all feel like things that would be in the movie Her. Like, it's all of them are like a different commentary on contemporary society and culture. It's like, oh, someone's looking at a screen, but their eyes are looking somewhere else. And someone is alone in a room that has like full camera equipment, but then it's not turned on. Everything is a short story by Ted Chiang.
Yeah, I really do feel we've been in the same room so much recently. Yeah. We've been recording, and now we're sort of returning to our roots of being separate. You know, we are, I think it's, you have to bring it up, we are a pandemic era. The roots of this podcast are pandemic era.
I would say we got too cocky after lockdown measures lifted, and we said, oh, the pandemic is over. It's time for us to be in the same room. And then sure enough, that was not the case, despite what the CDC will tell you. And that's why now, because the pandemic is raging on, we are back in different rooms.
Yeah, actually, Well, I have to say how, you know, I do feel jealous of your backdrop. I know this is...
And again, we've mentioned that... I think actually this might be the first time the listeners are hearing about this, because this episode is going to come out first. So we should go right out and say it. I am recording in a room that is overlooking sort of... I would say it's close enough to Times Square that it feels like Times Square. I'm on 46th Street. And it looks like I am at... like hosting New Year's Eve in Times Square. It looks like I'm hosting TRL. It looks like I'm going to look down and all my fans will be there saying, when's the next episode of Stradiolab coming out?
Yeah. I mean, literally, I need like an epilepsy warning before this episode, because
yes,
there's
flashing behind me.
Flashing billboard lights behind you. And I can't, it's so jarring. You've already pointed out, but you were wearing such a tasteful sort of black ensemble. And it is... like, you need to like a flat brim hat or like some shiny sneaker or something, because you in Times Square in sort of a museum curator outfit is quite jarring.
I feel like, because you are right that I am, for even for my own standards, I'm wearing a very sort of serious looking outfit. I'm all navy and black. And because I lost my glasses, I'm actually wearing my backup glasses, which are a thick black frame.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh, my hair is freshly cut. Okay, I'm wearing a watch.
Yeah.
And so I think what it looks like is if like a professor of sociology was trying to appeal to a wider audience and went on Joe Rogan and went on like a shock jock podcast and is trying to maintain his dignity while he is in the middle of Times Square being interviewed by Joe Rogan.
And this is one that is genius and correct. Two, do you think, okay, how possible is it as an individual to ever maintain dignity in an undignified space?
Okay, first of all, you're quoting me.
Oh, wait, yes. Tell the tweet.
Well, so earlier this week,
our famous segment, Tell the Tweet.
Our famous segment, Tell the Tweet. Earlier this week, I had the thought, you know, which I do think is actually a profound truth of our times, which is everyone thinks they're going to be the first person to maintain their dignity while posting online.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone thinks they're going to be the first person ever in history for whom that is the case. They're like, I see everyone else humiliating themselves. This is actually going to go, you know, is related to our topic, and we will bring our guest in a second. Everyone sees everyone else humiliating themselves, and our hubris makes us think, but if I speak out publicly, if I clack, clack, clack on my keyboard and then hit post, it'll be different because it's coming from me and I have interiority, whereas all these people don't have interiority. Come to find out, everyone thinks they themselves have interiority. It's just that social media flattens that interiority, and so then you think everyone else doesn't have it, but you're the only one that does.
I mean, I think this is genius, and I do want to almost expand it to real life spaces as well.
Yes, you're saying you can can you maintain your dignity while being in an undignified environment? Fine. So social media is one such environment. I would say another one is like,
for example, I consider myself alternative and even cool. And then I find myself in an office, and there's nothing more shameful than trying to hold on to any semblance of cool when you're inside of an office. When you are in a corporate space and you are pretending to be cool, that is dark. And it almost points out just how like sad and pathetic you are.
Here's another example. Being in a fitting room, trying on a pair of pants that don't fit, or even if you're someone who wears suits, you know, being like wearing something that clearly doesn't fit so that someone can touch you around your private areas and make it so that it fits better. I mean, is there a way for you to maintain a semblance of integrity in that moment and sort of be like, feel on a higher plane?
There's no way. We are only products of our environment. We can't fight it.
Yeah.
It's just the truth.
I think that is very much the case with, like, when you have to, when some really respect, when like they make Judith Butler do a TikTok or something. I actually recently saw a clip of Judith Butler sort of jokingly standing Beyonce. So it's Judith Butler being interviewed, and some interviewer is like, so would you say that no one lays claim to a specific identity, blah, blah, blah? And then Judith Butler is like, well, except Beyonce. And in that moment, my soul left my body. I said, how far we have fallen.
Damn, that is tough. Yeah.
No,
I think really this is a perfect place to do so.
I think this is sort of a perfect conversation for her to weigh in on. So without further ado, she's joining the Timers Club. We'll give her little jacket afterwards, and we'll do a sketch about it, where it's you and Paul Rudd.
That's
yeah. Please welcome, and dare I say, you know, in the previous world, I might say, musician, podcaster, actress. Now I will say filmmaker, writer, director of the new film from Neon Pictures, Stress Positions, Theta Hamill.
Hello, you both. Hello to you both. George, Sam, it's a pleasure to be back.
It's a pleasure to be doing this hilarious two-timers sketch with Paul Rudd.
Yeah, he's on his way. It's going to be Paul Rudd. Be great. Alec Baldwin is actually.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Martin's in the studio tonight, so that's really exciting.
That's huge. He's a fellow two-timer. Yeah. I don't know.
He's
a five-timer. I'm getting my jokes mixed up.
Yeah. But Theta, you know, speaking of being able to maintain your dignity while being in an undignified space, you know, we are forcing you to do a video podcast. There's no way around it.
Yes.
You are someone who I do believe has dignity. And yet we have made you come to Midtown in order to film a videotaped comedy podcast hosted by two gay guys. Do you feel like you are able to maintain your dignity?
I think so. Okay. So far, yes.
Uh-huh.
That is because I was thinking when you guys were talking that it is context specific, that it's like a shoe and a foot or something, that there are people, maybe podcasters, who by vocation are able to maintain their dignity while doing a podcast, as ridiculous as that sounds. Mm-hmm. There are also people who, like, for example, models. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Who can maintain their dignity in the most ridiculous situation, as long as somebody is taking their photograph for a modeling job. Yeah. Like, they can stick their tongue out or bend over or like play with the otters, or they can hurl a whatever embarrassing thing. They can be covered in mud.
Yeah.
And because it's a fashion editorial and they are a fashion model, they'll preserve their dignity. But if you put them on a podcast, I'm not saying this is necessarily the case. Like, maybe they'll can hold.
Yes, I mean,
maintain it, but they might fall apart.
Yes,
they might fall right in their face.
That is a very good point. I mean, the model thing is such a great example, because these women are put in the most humiliating situations, and not only do they maintain their dignity, they are elevated somehow. Like, you are then suddenly
is so genius. Yes. I'm like, the difficulty of being a model is maintaining dignity in undignified positions.
That is the entire genius behind America's Next Top Model, is what if you took women who are not able to maintain their dignity in these situations and then put them in even worse situations than Bella Hadid is put in? That is the cruelty of it, is being like, if Bella Hadid was writhing around in a salad, she would somehow find a way to maintain her dignity.
Yes.
But you, stupid bitch from Ohio, you can't.
Well, this is the problem. That's the other thing, is that it's actually like, if you ever have a second angle on someone posing for the main camera, there's no dignity there, even for models, frankly.
Yes.
When you see them in a BTS, like doing this, like moving their face around like this and holding a position, even the most beautiful of them, you go, stupid, like, that's the dumbest thing. And then you see the photo and you go, I'm stupid.
Sure.
I'm stupid because I was trying to make a mockery. But that second angle is like, that second angle is always devastating. And that's the reality show angle.
Right.
Those cameras.
Of course. I mean, so then I guess it really leads to the question, like, is dignity innate, or is it about knowing your angles?
It's about knowing your angles. It's about compatibility.
Yeah.
I think it's really about compatibility.
It's always being aware of context and where you fit into it.
Yes. And it's really hard. What were we talking about right before this? We weren't talking about, my God, don't go back. Don't get lost in thought. There was another context where you were
the fitting room.
The
fitting room.
Yes.
No, it wasn't the fitting room. I ruined it. I just lost.
No. Sam, you said something.
An office space.
A corporate setting.
No.
Damn.
It wasn't that. I'm sorry. We'll check record later.
Well, there's social media. Well, is that it? Because we were talking about.
No.
Okay.
No, it was.
We're gonna check the
record.
Well, fuck.
I'm sorry to you both. I'm sorry to straight.
No, never apologize for being yourself.
Never apologize. No.
Nobody.
Recently was eating food, and models were sitting at the table next to me. Pretty much every meal in Los Angeles, California, models end up sitting next to you at the dinner table. Yeah. And it was actually one of the most exciting things to hear their conversation, because I've never heard a model who is a straight male model being like, oh man, I mean, the casting for the Bottega show this year was like fucking fire. Like, seriously, like, I was so excited to be part of it. And it was like, to hear that tone with those words was so jarring to me. And I was like, but you like Bottega Veneta, like you're a gay guy. And they're like, no, because I'm saying that it's fire.
Totally.
The word fire. They, no, they're active participants in gay culture. It's again, it's, you know, it's one of the straightest things.
Do you feel like, okay, so here's, I would say what Sam is describing, that is an angle where they're not.
Dignity down. All that power she built up.
Dignity down. Someone get her dignity back.
No, I have so much to say on this.
But you know what, though? I just want to say sneezing, a perfect example of like, is there a way to maintain your dignity while sneezing? Literally, no. Not even if you are...
If you are Giselle Bundchen, you can maintain your dignity while sneezing. If you're Giselle...
You think so?
I don't think so. I think it's probably grotesque. And I think that also it gets really ridiculous when people try and daintify it.
Yes.
When you hear people give a really squeaky little demure little sneeze, like they seem way worse than somebody who like goes, ha!
I actually find it so sad when someone does a little sneeze, because it's like, live out loud, like believe in yourself, take up space, you know?
Take up space. We tell our girls to be small. You have to go big.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you have to go big. I used to be very embarrassed about my dad. You know, dads classically all sneeze as though it's like they're in The Lion King or something, and it's like the big audition scene.
Yeah.
And I used to be so embarrassed of that, and I'm like, that is so much more dignified than being like...
Well, I'm also like, do you get the release if you do the little one? Like, I don't know if you get the release.
Exactly. People are afraid of the release.
Who will I be if I get released? I think they are. It is a scary thought for a lot of people.
But to go back to your male model thing, I do think what you're describing is exactly seeing them at the wrong angle, because you are there as an observer, as a reality show observer, seeing them speak while eating lunch. They are not supposed to.
I mean,
to be
also
doing
seeing like the half eaten food, like it fully ruins the fantasy. Yeah. Like it's sort of, you need almost the like Paris Hilton eating the burger, like where you have to like pretend you ate the whole thing at least, so that it's not like, oh, I'm like trying to be skinny. Like I need to feel like I just am this way.
Well, this, I remember this, I mean, I've probably like used this anecdote to death, but I think not, I mean, to be vulgar, to be sexual about it, that there are people for whom getting caught in a sex act would not be undignified.
Yes.
There are certain faces, like, you know, there's like a dick, there's like a cocksucker face where if they are caught on a, like a, blowing someone on camera, it wouldn't be a scandal. You wouldn't go, oh, how outrageous, how embarrassing. Mm. And I do think that there's something also in that particular face that they can eat with dignity.
You can suck cock with dignity, you can eat with dignity.
Yeah, if you have a sort of mouth face that allows you to like put a full cock into your mouth and like still be yourself, and everybody goes, oh yeah, that's Gary, that's just how he is.
Right.
Like you could probably eat a big full fat Subway sandwich like dripping down your front and not lose anything in terms of dignity. You probably
Do either of you feel like that can eat and or suck cock with dignity?
Absolutely not. I have a small mouth. I have a weird face. It's not going to work.
I actually can suck cock with dignity.
I believe that too. I believe that.
I cannot.
You could probably eat. You could go to Schnippers.
I would say, so this is, wait, I'm actually really happy we're talking about this. I think there are two kinds of people when it comes to sex.
Yeah.
One is the person for whom their sex personality is sort of a, you know, slight variation on their normal personality and extension of their normal personality. And there are other people who disappear into sex.
Yes.
And I do think, and who knows, maybe this is because I'm not liberated enough or something. I am the former. I am like, I, of course, get into it and enjoy it. It's not like I'm podcasting. You're not like, is this cock gay or straight? exactly. But I can, I'm recognized. If someone walked in on me and saw me having sex, they'd be like, that's sort of what I imagine.
Yes. George You wouldn't be caught out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have in my life had sex with people that I've known socially and then had sex with where I'm like, oh, you're the other kind.
Yeah.
You suddenly are literally being like a basically drag character.
Yes.
Sex drag character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I now have to almost meet this new person that I did not know when we were hanging out at Julia's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and not to get too...
No, it's a real betrayal.
Do you feel like you're the... Which of the two would you say you are?
Oh my God, I don't know. Well, I think for me, back when I was... I'm not very sexually active because I'm monogamous at the moment.
Oh, and, you know, go what, off.
That just means like a smooch and rolling over and going to sleep. But I would get a little bit more effeminate and soft and gentle. Uh-huh. And I guess... It's continuous with the person that I would like to be. Like if I don't sneeze and have my headphones fall over my face, like I would like to be more demure in life and walk daintily around, but I could maintain that at most for the length of the
sex. That is so fascinating because you would think it would be the opposite where, you know, you're in a reliance.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, no, that's like the sort of conventional narrative is like, oh, someone is really quiet in person, but then a freak in the sheets.
Right.
But you're saying the opposite. It's like,
it would because of the endorsement, almost like if you're like the camera gives you permission as a model to throw your hair around and dive into the mud. If a man comes over thinking that he's going to be with a beautiful trans lady, and that's what he is in the mood for, then you can fulfill that, and you don't feel like you're taking any liberties. You don't feel like you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
But if I were to walk around floating and talking in a floaty, delicate little voice, I would feel like I actually had lost dignity at that point. I would feel like if I was ordering at Starbucks in that voice or something, I would feel... Mm-hmm. I'd feel silly. So I don't know if I'm fully the second category. I'm not the category of the beast
that comes out. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But I don't know if it's fully continuous.
So maybe there is a third category that is going...
It's the opposite direction.
I was about to say making yourself smaller. That's not what it is because that would be, in fact, femphobic.
No, it is, but it is that, though.
But, you know, it's making yourself...
Lighter, smaller.
Lighter, smaller.
Lesser.
Lesser, but not in a shame-filled way, just because that is what the persona you want to embody.
It's the one that it feels appropriate to the situation. Yeah. So, but I haven't been in that role for a long time.
Interesting.
I'm definitely, I think, in the camp of losing yourself. I'm like, I feel like I'm like a little bit different.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I block my brows to get into the drag character of having sex.
is that out of carnal, just carnal energy, or is it out of a, do you actively want to leave yourself?
I think it's, I think it's a little bit more out of carnal energy. And it's also about like that's I'm good. Sort of, oh my God, this is going to be the most embarrassing thing I've ever said. Sex to me, well, it's a lot like improv. And you're...
It's not like it.
And I think I'm sort of like, okay, who am I going to be in this scene? Like, I'm playing I'm listening and I'm like going to respond and sort of be whatever. I'm going to agree until we find ourselves in a different position.
I sometimes am almost envious of people who grew up with a lot of shame around sex.
No, sure.
Then they got to feel the liberation like, finally, I'm myself.
Yes.
Whereas I, you know, my parents are by no means like hippies or anything like that. But like my mom talks to us pretty openly about sex. Like my sisters will tell her about like guys or whatever. And I'm like, okay, so it's like, this is my impression of me in the middle of sex. Wait, so my mom would approve of this?
I had the opposite. My family did not talk about sex ever. And so...
There you go.
So I'm like, okay, I'm going to be bad. Like, this is illegal. What I'm doing is illegal, and it's not me doing it.
Wait, I actually am so eager to get into the topic. So I'm like, let's literally do our first segment, get it out of the way, and then get into the topic. How do we feel about that?
I think that's beautiful.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We are both dealing with such different issues in our day-to-day lives. You have a full-time job in Los Angeles. You've had to uproot your home. You have to figure out work-life balance. Meanwhile, I am a freelancer in New York City. How do I fit it all in one day? How do I create my own schedule? What am I, some boss lady in a film?
You know, it's so hard. You have to be boss and employee. But you know what? We can't keep these things bottled up. You know, we need to let them out.
That's right. People all carry around different stressors, both big and small. And when you bottle them up, it can start to affect you negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
I'll tell you something. Therapy in the past for me has been just a place where once a week I can tell someone what I'm thinking of in a safe and enclosed space where no one can enter and ask me to send an email, because it is my time and it is my time for therapy. And everyone deserves that in all across this great nation.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and hey, suited for your schedule.
So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Stradio today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Stradio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Theta, our first segment is called Straight Shooters. And in this segment, we ask you a series of... You didn't have to prepare anything, don't
worry. Okay.
We ask you a series of rapid-fire questions where you have to choose one thing or another thing to gauge your familiarity with and complicity in straight culture.
Okay.
The one rule is you can't ask any follow-up questions about how the game works. You just have to go with your gut.
Okay.
And you can't overthink it, because overthinking is... the leading cause of death among intellectuals, among Manhattan-based intellectuals.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So let me pull mine up. All right. Okay, ready? Okay. Dripping with contempt or quipping about Hannah Arendt?
Dripping with contempt.
Okay, Theta, camouflage or décolletage?
Décolletage.
Theta, building a brand that can cut through the noise or sinking into sand but doing it with poise?
Sinking into sand but doing it with poise.
Okay. Chilaquiles or Mila Kunis?
Oh, chilaquiles.
Okay. The rent was due or get bent? Adieu.
The rent was due. The rent was due.
Okay. Mixing business with pleasure or mixing salt with pepper?
Mixing salt with pepper.
Wow, a classic combination if I've ever heard one. Okay. The Joker folie à deux or playing poker and entering that milieu?
I have to say playing poker and entering that milieu, no offense.
Okay. Suddenly the Kuntz is me or suddenly I see. This is what I want to be.
Suddenly the Kuntz is me.
God, to be two gay guys that without planning it did two Lady Gaga themed
in a row. Ending up with the second one, you know, for my disparagement of the first one.
Yeah.
I would never ever not want to be two gay guys having two Lady Gaga references in a segment.
Well, because we can't get into Gaga because
it's true.
It's too raw.
It's too raw.
But I know that you are someone who thinks about
Oh, yeah. And I know it's like, I know that I'm going to have to think more about her the closer we get to Folie à Deux. Whereas Kunst is me, those are happy memories.
Those are happy,
memories. Then, yes.
You know,
you actually really have to pace yourself in terms of Folie à Deux.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't, there's a world in which I will enter such a deep depression if I think about it too hard now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's too, actually too many. It's too much.
I mean, it's the way that a piece of media is like, okay, the next year is laid out for me. Like, I know what I will be talking about, when I will be talking about it, how I will be talking about it.
I'm feeling it right now. I'm feeling it, the mounting.
Well, because, and you're feeling it because, speaking of pieces of media, you know, you are actively promoting your directorial debut.
That's a nice segue. That's a nice segue. I'll draft off of Folie à Deux. You know, fantastic energy.
We weren't able to locate a screener, and we are both seeing it along with everyone else in New York and Los Angeles this week. But, and correct me if I'm wrong, from what I understand, it is about a young tennis player played by Zendaya.
Yes. It's about a love triangle, a classic formation.
She gets injured playing tennis.
Brutally so. And you see every bit of it. You see that bone through the knee.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and horrific. So you base this on your career as a tennis player.
As a tennis
player.
Pro.
No, as a tennis coach, I based it on my career as a tennis coach, coaching, you know, young professionals. And I myself was hot gay Josh O'Connor or whatever.
Oh, see, I would have thought you were the Zendaya, but you were hot.
No, I was hot gay Josh O'Connell, and I. This is earlier in my life. You know,
that's true.
I had some serious changes, but before I did that, boy, did I have a great time. And I challenged a lot of stereotypes before I got the name.
You're one of the top people who challenged stereotypes.
Yes, there's three of us, you know, mm-hmm, and all of us.
Yes, you, Josh O'Connor, mm-hmm, and Luca Guadagnino.
And the other one, the twink one.
Yeah, the twink one.
Those are the challengers.
Imagine if, you know, you're the other twink, okay?
Yeah.
Your entire life you've been told, God, what a beautiful twink you are. You know, someday you'll be one of the twinks we see on TV.
Funny.
Okay,
this is so funny. Mike Figgis.
Imagine that is happening for you. Suddenly, you get the opportunity to be a twink on TV, suddenly the Kunst is you. Lo and behold, you're sharing the screen with Zendaya, the number one actress of her generation,
yes,
and Josh O'Connor, the chosen twink of 2024.
But Josh O'Connor is not
the
twink.
Chosen. Look, it doesn't matter anymore. It's as if he were the chosen twink, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
because little Josh has got like 5 billion gigs lined up.
That's true.
He's been chosen. All right.
Did you see La Chimera?
I did. Yeah.
What
yeah.
did you think?
I thought it was beautiful. Yeah. I thought it was nice. I thought, you know, and it features the chosen twink himself, looking wonderful and all filthy.
Yeah.
Down up
and
in
speaking Italian
tombs.
The entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
I mean,
Sam, you seem like you didn't see La Chimera, also from Neon?
No.
In theaters now?
No.
I like that the one movie we're not talking about is yours.
Well, I want to support the brand. I want to support the company.
Of course, yes.
We have La Chimera. Well, yeah, we have Immaculate in theaters now.
Oh, yes. Immaculate with a gorgeous and talented Sydney Sweeney,
Sydney Sweeney, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! I think it's really smart to raise up Neon. You know, a rising tide lifts all ships. So I think that's... Do you...
We were talking about Josh O'Connor. Yeah, I was trying to probe your discomfort.
I do think, Sam, you did seem very defensive when I called him a twink and have been a bit quiet as we're getting into, you know, how he's the chosen one of 2024.
It's not that I don't think he's the chosen one. I just don't know if he's the chosen twink. I think, you know, I think words matter. I think.
Well, of course, especially going into an election year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we can't just talk about a straight thing is just to call anybody a twink.
You're right. That's a good point.
And I'm like,
okay, but we aren't just calling him a twink. We're calling him the chosen twink.
Which but is the like, chosen twink has to be a twink. Like, I think he can be the chosen.
No, I don't think so. That's like, you know, speaking of chosen twinks, like is Paul Atreides a Fremen? Okay. No. He's just, he was chosen. That's the point.
That's literally the
chosen.
Point.
So
he wasn't a twink and then he was
you guys are both being the I'm being Zendaya in Dune 2, and I'm sort of being like, no, I don't, yeah. He's not my chosen twink.
Yeah.
And you are being the believers.
And we're like, follow my bitch.
We're yeah. being like Javier Bardem.
Javier Bardem, that's it.
Get in line. Yeah, fall in behind Josh O'Connor, the chosen twink. He's like, he's juicy and great and handsome. He's what we need, okay? It's mm-hmm. gravitas. Big, dirty hands in that fucking movie, digging through those tombs.
Yeah, digging through those tombs.
You're going to love it. He's got it all up and down that suit, okay? That white suit.
I mean, I can't wait to see it. I do find him extremely hot.
He's really hot.
Okay.
And your hesitation, Sam, is that he's too tall? Because I do think he has a twink. He has a twink.
I can't believe I'm being grilled. I think I'm being so bullied right now. And I think once the listeners.
You think Mike Figgis is the chosen twink? You think the other challenger is the chosen twink?
Yeah. No one even knows who that is, Sam.
I think he's more twinky. I think if we're being honest, I think he's more twinky.
Well, I guess wow. so. I mean, that's true. But I don't see how it has any bearing on this discussion.
I just think he's like, Josh O'Connor's like too beefy.
Wow.
Oh my God. Well, we've hit a wall here. We're not going to come together on
Look,
this.
Look,
we're on the East Coast. You're on the West
yeah.
Coast.
Maybe Josh O'Connor is just too East Coast for you.
Oh my God!
And the other
it's
one
like
is
pizza,
West Coast.
It's LA like kinds of pizza.
It's pizza. Yeah. Cigarettes, all black. Oh it's Carrie Bradshaw. Yeah. It's the West Village. Mm-hmm. It's Julius.
Yeah.
Yes.
God
Keith
damn.
Herring.
You know, I put in my fucking time, and the you're stripping
Keith
me of
the
my
legendary
New York.
Keith Herring. Have you heard of Basquiat? God, those were the days.
Those were the days. You could get a loft for a nickel. Sure, it would have roaches.
A loft for a nickel, and then a blowjob in the corner.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
Amanda Lepore.
We were all fucking and sucking
we were
back then.
All fucking and sucking back then.
And Josh O'Connor takes us back to those days. Pre Giuliani, Philip Glass, you know, Robert Wilson.
Yeah,
Basquiat.
Oh, yeah, Basquiat. Well. I'll reflect on this and I'll try to understand where you're coming from.
You know, whether or not he's a twink, it is exciting to have a new guy.
It's nice to have a new guy. I feel that he is like our Adam Driver if Adam Driver was set to play basically like five gay roles in a row.
Yeah, totally.
You know, which is what I wanted from Adam Driver and probably will never get.
Yeah.
Has he ever played gay?
Adam Driver.
Yeah.
I actually don't know. I somehow. Oh, you know what? I saw him, speaking of Times Square,
in
Angels in America. He was playing gay then.
The Mormon.
And gay and Mormon.
That's a great role for him. Was he?
Oh, no, he was Lewis. No, he wasn't. Oh. He was Lewis. Uh-oh. He was Tony Kushner. Can you believe it? Adam Driver.
Was he good?
Yes, he was good. He was extremely attractive. This was before he became like a huge, huge star. Anyway, speaking of attractive men, you know.
Well, you know what's, I just want to say in terms of Adam Driver, like anyone up and down, you know, Sunset Boulevard has to play a gay role for some Netflix rom-com. And the one person, as you're saying, which is so genius, that would be such a fun person to see in a gay role.
Oh, yes.
Doesn't do it. Adam Driver should be in like a Oscar movie playing a gay guy.
They believe me, I bet Luca Guadagnino every day is like saying, did he call
he's
back?
Violently
did he
jerking
call back?
It.
Being like, he's ready to stand outside that door and it doesn't have, the movie never has to get made. He's just saying, Adam, please, please, I need a new sofa.
I mean,
I need to redo my patio. Can you please just sign on to a development deal to play a gay role for me? I'm Luca.
While we're talking about just generally handsome actors, I'm like, Paul Mescal also constantly is like has like 14 gay roles in the works.
Not the chosen twink.
Well, I think we can all look. Yes, go on.
But
go
I'm
on.
Just sort of like, I'm sort of like, okay, wait, what are you trying to, are you, is this like, are you gay? Like, bro, are you gay? Like,
gay?
Bro, you're playing gay so much. I'm like, are you gay? Like, I actually feel like he's trying to tell us he's gay.
I think it was a fucking huge mistake for him to do all this gay shit.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Paul Mescal.
I think his star has never been brighter.
Really? You do?
Kind of.
To me, like, there's something like corny and squeamish about like going like, yeah, I really got into it. No holds barred in terms of kissing and sex with my male co-star.
Totally. I mean, listen, I agree that it's corny. I guess my, you know, you have to, in order to be a star, you have to reach the right level of corniness.
Yeah,
where you can be both accepted by the A24 crowd and accepted by the Netflix crowd. And I think he is at that perfect nexus right now. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You know, poke him with one pinky and he might fall.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's there reigning forever.
He has to be careful.
But I do think he is in that sweet spot that Timmy was after, like, Call Me By Your Name or after Lady
Mescal.
Mescal.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe not as big, but you know what I mean? Like half indie, half mainstream.
No, that's true.
And actually where Adam Driver was sort of right after Girls, where he had like done Girls, but also done Star Wars or whatever.
The thing is, you never know with...
Preach it, sister.
you never know who's gonna listen and get mad at you.
Children will listen.
Children will listen. So to me, I'll say that I wish the best for Paul Mescal. That said, I want to offer my condolences for him because he's not the chosen twink. The chosen twink is Josh O'Connor. It's already been decided.
It's been decided.
The clock has been set for the next presidential term. That's the Josh O'Connor term. Chalamet was the chosen twink for the past couple of years. Now he's, I don't know if he's the chosen twink. You know, to me, it's like,
it's tough.
He's actually too big.
I agree. I actually think Timmy is so big that he is surpassing just what the volume that his tiny body can handle.
I agree.
And the only way further is for him to like literally get buff.
Yeah.
He's done as much as he can as a little twink.
Yeah. No, true. It's like, and we can't just see him get tossed around. He has to like,
he has to fucking man up.
He has to bulk up. He has to go to Schnippers. He has to shove a burger in his mouth. It would look fine.
Wow. We really are doing an amazing job of not promoting Theta's film.
Oh yes, Theta's film.
I think maybe a better job than anyone of not promoting Theta's film. I'm like, Theta, do you feel when someone avoids promoting your movie, are you like this is good because I can continue to joke and laugh, or are you like, this is bad because I need to promote this movie?
No, I don't promote the movie. I mean, I'm happy to. I feel like it's enough to go movie, Theta Hound, whatever, and then talk about other things. I can talk about the movie. The movie is great. It's the greatest movie ever made by anybody.
Greatest movie ever made.
So
certainly greatest movie ever made, starring three past Radiolab guests. And I think we can.
Who's the third?
Oh wait, that's not true. Because sorry, maybe it is true, but I just mean there are other examples. I would say the two movies that star three Radiolab guests are Fire Island and your film. John and Amy Zimmer.
Ah, amazing. Yes. And we make up, I don't know what you want to make of this, the rotten millennial core of the movie.
Yes. Oh, the three of you.
The three of us. So the three characters, there's three sort of, I don't want to say rotten, you know, they're fallible, but it's not totally abject. And then they're sort of all engaging with members of the younger generation. And then there are some members of the older generation. So it's all about this sort of generational antagonism a little bit, which is very topical, very hot right now.
Well, can I tell you something? Because I actually noticed this, like, again, we have not seen the film, but we know a lot about it.
Yeah.
And I think you are someone, and maybe I'm projecting, but I think you are someone who either tackles everything head on or wants to exist outside of the discourse altogether. And I think with this movie, you took everything, like generational discourse, COVID hypocrisies, sort of like doing a recent period piece, which I think is very on trend. Like you really went all in on all of it. Like you were like, this is no matter what, a conversation piece. Was that intentional?
Well, I kind of did both things, maybe in a cowardly way. Like the movie does, there was a version of the movie that was like really early draft that was so tasteful. Mm-hmm. And like, I do a shit and piss podcast.
Yes.
Like, and that's like at least half of what I am capable of doing. And it's not that I went in and did a shit and piss draft. I was just like, this is too aloof. So I'll steer it a little bit more toward the the bullseye a little bit.
Yeah.
But the movie is oblique in the way that it handles a lot of stuff that is ambient in the discourse. So there is stuff about ethnicity identity. There is stuff about generational antagonism. There's obviously stuff about COVID and mm-hmm. And pandemic stuff. But like the... I really don't think that the movie makes a meal of it the way that like a fucking contemporary, not to disparage this, because it's like a little bit of a cliche and maybe nobody is doing this anymore, but a contemporary play would do, where like you take a topic from the headlines, you have like a professor say something untoward and they're off the cuff remarks to a student, and then the play ends with somebody having strangled somebody else, heaving, covered in water, you know, panting, and then the curtain drops down there and they go, ah! Do you know what I'm saying?
I've seen four plays like that this calendar year.
Really? Yeah. Because it is like, okay, I do think that my goal with the movie, and I'm being oblique now, but my goal with the movie is to actually shrink all of this explosive discourse mm-hmm. down into something a little bit smaller and gentler in order to actually be able to look at it without the raging torrent of like of Twitter
yes.
and things like that. So and the present moment.
It's interesting. It's the difference between like an allegory and a I guess it's the difference between going big and going small. And actually this is something I was thinking about the other day is like, are small questions bigger than big questions?
This is such a classic George thought.
You know what I mean?
It's hard to come down one way or the other.
Like, is this, actually, when you think about like, what's the biggest question? Like, what is the meaning of life?
Yeah.
Is George, that actually the dumbest question? What, Sam?
No, I have to say, I'm addicted to when you do this. I think it's like, one, I think it is like it's always smart and it's always funny, but it's also like, sometimes like if someone were doing a parody of us, it would be like, is something so hot, it's actually frozen.
But yeah, no, of course. And yeah, I'm aware of I'm doing a parody of myself.
No, I think I love it. I'm addicted to it.
But you know what I mean? Like the biggest question: what is the meaning of life? What is the whatever? Is that actually the dumbest, most cowardly question you can ask? And actually, the biggest question you can ask is like, what's for lunch?
Well, this is like I do think that there is a. The question of greatness yes. and scale is one that I have an opinion on, which is just like that there is an attempt to make making a movie, for example, like to pick an important topic and maybe an important person related to mm-hmm. that topic, and then to make an important movie. So you have, let's say, nuclear annihilation.
Yes.
And then you have Oppenheimer, and you go, I'm going to talk about Oppenheimer. I'm not going to talk about some guy that was involved in building the machine. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to talk about the douchebag that dropped them from the plane. Like, I'm not going to talk about any of these small things. I'm going to make a big, immense movie about a big, immense person, about a big, immense, important topic. And I do think that the topic gets drowned in that scale a little bit. So you actually are losing some of the insight into what it actually is. Maybe the actual extent of the horror of it you're losing.
You know what it is maybe is that you are trying to capture the entirety of it. And in doing so, you're making it smaller because you're making it fit into a box. Whereas if you do a small story about a family grappling with the anxiety of impending nuclear doom,
yes.
it remains this big thing that is unreachable.
Yes, and this even happens with framing. That if you're walking in the subway and you're like, how can I get the full scale of this environment on screen? You pick a wide lens mm-hmm. and it compresses everything and you see the whole subway, but it feels small because it's been squeezed into the frame. Whereas if there's more outside of the frame, everything feels bigger. So yeah. I don't know. The relationship of big and small is exciting. It's an exciting one.
You know who I am? I'm like a small of a big thing that works well that I like is I'm gonna say it, Cloverfield, where it's like they're big monster but you're only seeing it through these like people totally. That are like, we're at a party, oh no, because like when there's a big monster thing, it's like I'm seeing it through the government's eyes and it's like exactly. we have to take this thing down. I'm like, well, that's kind of boring actually.
Yeah, You don't feel scared by it.
I don't feel scared.
Well, it's an act. You see a giant Godzilla. That's a toy. I've seen that at FAO Schwartz.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's this big.
And it's made of chocolate and I ate it.
It's made of chocolate and I ate it.
But yeah, I think that's a very fruitful question.
Interesting.
No, that's an amazing. I also, you both of you in all black, discussing this. I was really like, I'm at a talk back. I'm at a Q&A. This is so MoMA coded.
Should we get into our topic?
Yes. That's a great idea.
Theta, I would love for you to sort of like take it away and just tell us like what the topic is and what is straight about it. And then we can go from there.
Okay. So this is a little bit of a loose one. So I thought like, I think maybe we can develop it a little bit.
Yes.
But it's with regarding straight men, the difference between shame and embarrassment, specifically that they never feel embarrassed, mm-hmm. but they quite often feel ashamed.
Yes.
And the one example that I can think of is that I'm trying after a long absence to go back to the gym, and I feel so embarrassed at the gym. Yes. I think that being at the gym is totally embarrassing. I think lifting weights is embarrassing. I think the whole thing is really mm-hmm. embarrassing. The outfits are embarrassing.
Yes.
I don't think that straight men are embarrassed to be at the gym. I don't think they're embarrassed to be grunting and lifting weights and heaving things. I think they feel shame that they aren't stronger.
Mm.
I feel they feel, you know, in a way that I don't feel ashamed to not be strong. I don't feel ashamed to be not good at lifting weights or working out. I'm embarrassed,
you just feel embarrassed
to be at a gym.
Yes. Wow. That's, well, I'm just spitballing here. First thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. First thought is embarrassment more corporeal and shame is more internal.
Yes.
Like you are so aware of your body and that's what makes you embarrassed.
Yeah, shame, embarrassment is like right in the face.
Yes.
It's like you feel you're blushing, you get embarrassed, you don't know what to do with your hands,
right.
That kind of thing.
And it's like a guy, even just like a guy, the sounds men make like at the urinal, just like you're in the bathroom yeah. trying to be a normal person and someone next to you is being like, oh.
Yeah, with, yes. Unremorse with no remorse.
Yeah.
I don't know, for example, if straight guys feel embarrassed when their jokes fail.
Mm.
I don't know if they feel embarrassed like when they flop at a dinner party, like at a dinner party conversation. What do you think?
I almost think that there's like, they don't put the pressure on themselves to succeed at that. Like,
yeah.
Like
yeah, that's
this
fag thing.
I think like at a dinner party, like I do think, I mentioned this before, but like a straight person feels embarrassed at like the idea of public performance. Like they, like putting on a show is embarrassing,
yeah. Yes.
But like it just moving, there's something almost like, back to your small versus big question about this, where like gay people feel embarrassed in the small and comfortable and not embarrassed in the big, like,
wow.
And I feel like straight people are the opposite.
Okay, this is actually genius because I think this is also, okay, this is also why gay people feel more comfortable like projecting sort of like having an influencer persona of some
yes.
sort.
Yes.
Whereas straight men, you know, for all their flaws, are not trying to gain a following. Like, I understand there are counterexamples and there are like, you know, there's Jeff Bezos and you know, people are trying to go viral on LinkedIn or something. But
sure.
Like, in general,
sure.
The stereotype of like, you meet your girlfriend's boyfriend, the stereotype is like, he has a private Instagram that he never posts on.
Right. Yeah.
He is not interested in that. He thinks it's for chicks.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's less comfort with like sort of a public projection of self. And maybe that arises from a deep actually security in who he is. Like he doesn't feel the need to project.
He's not trying to get ahead of the story.
He's not trying to get ahead of the story because yeah. It never even occurred to him that he would look bad in the story when it's published.
That's true. I think getting ahead of the story is the key there. I think like thinking of things in terms of the story is a very
yes,
gay
yes,
thing.
Yes.
I think
it's
like,
truly
like,
what is the narrative?
Yeah. What is the narrative? How am I being seen? How can I make this work? And I think that it's,
I mean, it's genius because it's like, okay, who writes the official historical narrative? You know, the hegemon, you know, the people in charge. Okay?
Yeah.
Yes. The people who win write history. So it sort of goes to show, if you are in the privileged class, you're not worrying about what the story will ultimately look like, because you know you will come out as a protagonist.
It'll be flattering
without you having to do anything.
Yes.
Whereas if you are in any sort of marginalized class, it's on you to be self-publishing a zine.
Yes. Yes.
Otherwise, you'll be lost to history.
Yeah, you'll be lost. You'll just be wiped.
Worse, you'll be the villain.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. There's also something... hear me out. I'm trying this. Where it's like... okay. Like... this is hard. Gay people are like, okay, I've already, like, I've committed the ultimate shame. I'm doing anal. I'm being shameful. I'm being embarrassing. And so it's almost like, okay, well, now I can pursue, like, I can sort of do whatever I want at all times. Like, we've talked about that element. And then I feel like straight people still have a sense of, like, well, this will disrespect my family if I'm, like, trying to be an influencer on the internet. Like, if I'm, like, putting myself out, if I'm on stage wearing a silly costume, like, what will that say about my mother and father? And
I see that is perfect. I mean, it's literally the thesis of the concept of pride is, like, we have let go of shame and now there's no going back.
Yes, because maybe it is, like, there is an early experience. I do think that being in the closet, you feel ashamed. Mm-hmm. I do think that there is an early shame experience. And then there is this, like, releasing, there is a sort of Oppenheimer-style explosion of that. And you say, I leave shame behind, at least as far as this is concerned.
Yes.
Like, I will not be caught out being... G-A-Y. if pride is the word for that, then that's the word to use. Like, I don't know. You can... The thing that I think about is incels and how I don't really think that there are gay incels. Are there gay incels? I'm not tracking the issue.
I think there are... I think there are gay people who have the sensibility of an incel.
Yeah.
But I don't think they find community with other
incels. Oh, that's a great distinction.
Like,
really?
I think gay incels are basically like sort of online trolls that are being like so cruel.
Oh, okay. So, but they're like gay troll. But they could fuck
have sex.
If they want. They have
sex.
That's
a good point.
They're not cell.
That's true. And in fact, I think people that are in cells do not have the violent... Like, I think gay incels are much more withdrawn and not motivated by revenge.
Yeah, because I do think that this is like, okay, if I was like, you know, like... going out and trying to be gay and trying to make it work or go home with somebody and it didn't work out, I would be embarrassed.
Yes.
I think I would be embarrassed. And like, again, I'm being too annoying about this distinction, but...
No, I think
that incels feel ashamed
rather
than they even have to court women.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like... it's not like, oh, it's embarrassing to like try and flirt with a woman. Like, I don't know what to say. It's like, I think they feel a deep shame that is like, this is not supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're gay and you have an embarrassing experience, like that is supposed to happen. You signed up for that. Like, you know, when the minute you come out or whatever, you know that you're basically cursed to a life of abjection and you're sort of cool with it.
Yes.
And that's gay fun. That's how gay people have fun. By going, yeah, I'm cool with it. It's embarrassing, but what are you going to do? I don't know.
Well, there is a sort of, I mean, not to be truly like baby's first cultural critique, but like you could also connect that to like camp. Like,
sure,
it's like literally like celebrating the embarrassing.
Yes.
Like, you know, like.
I think so.
Wow.
I think so. And what do you think, Sam?
I think it's genius. I think, you know, I think the fact that we were able to bring it to
April 19th
is just a show that we are, in fact, an LGBTQ+ podcast.
Yeah.
You have to fucking hear. Sorry.
Keep going, please.
I have never in my life, I mean, I've commented on this a little bit, like, because the movie went to Sundance and we were doing a junket and somebody went, we really think you're, it's like, they said something about the movie being queer. And I was like, I did not think one time about it being a queer movie because there's no straight people in the movie. There's no straight character. It did not occur to me to put straight characters in the movie. And I didn't at all think that that would create a type of movie called a queer movie. But as the movie rolls out now and the marketing is coming out or whatever, and we're seeing like who the audience, the demographic is being targeted, you go, oh, it's a gay movie. Yeah. I didn't know that I was making a gay movie or a queer LGBT fucking movie.
You're making
movie.
Eating Out 4.
I thought I was making a movie, but we actually are just in this very abject little bubble.
It really is.
Sitting above Times Square.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, the that's bubble.
That's my baby's first inclusion.
No, it's true, though.
I keep thinking about this in terms of like putting a queer movie out into the public and asking the public to like come to the movie. And like the in terms of knowing like the narrative, like trying to craft the narrative or get ahead of it.
Yes.
The big example that I always think of is like Drag Race, which like half of queer culture was allowed on stage. The main stage, even though it's still a niche stage of like moms and their daughters watching it after school. Okay. Totally. But there is no drag queen on earth who would even bat an eyelid at like of their roommate getting fisted. Like, do you know what I'm saying? That like, like actually there's this whole half that hasn't been brought on stage, hasn't been brought onto the main stage by Obama and RuPaul's Drag Race. Is like the fact that like I wouldn't even blink. Like I wouldn't even blink at that.
Yeah.
And neither would anybody that I know.
And the moms have no idea.
That'll never come on stage. It'll never come on stage. It'll always be something over here. And like, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's one of the most interesting things is that like collectively as a gay community, we like don't publicize that side. Like it is like, it's like, yeah, we're this. And then it's like, but also, yeah, we're like fully having sex inside of bars.
But
and
this
it's
like, is this is the challenge with like, with this kind of visibility is that you actually lose yourself in trying to untangle the logical inconsistencies. Yeah. It's like when people, it's like with something like drag queen story time
hour,
or whatever, story hour.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to make the point both that drag queens are like this child friendly, essentially like Disney cartoon character. And it's so fun for kids to see bright colors and someone in a costume. And also that drag, and then in the same breath be like, drag is a radical queer art form that is anti-capitalist and like sex and kink positive.
Yes.
Like you just can't untangle those. And if you are sort of stupid and can't hold two ideas in your head at the same time, I see how someone could then be like, oh, so they're grooming.
So they're gonna be fisting at the library.
They're gonna be fisting at the library.
No, they're not gonna be fisting at the library. It's like being bilingual. It's like if somebody is bilingual, they speak one language when they're talking to those people and another here. And that's just what it means to be bilingual.
I mean,
so drag queens are bilingual, and the bilingual is reading kids' stories and fisting.
It's not exactly that, but it's not totally different.
I mean, dare I say, it goes back to our conversation about dignity and context.
Yeah.
What angle are you filming the drag queen from? Because from one angle, she's fisting.
Yeah.
From the other angle, she's reading Amelia Bedelia.
Yes, exactly. But that's
and actually that is, it's like, how do they maintain dignity in those different contexts is one of the big challenges of being a high profile drag queen in the year 2024.
It's crazy because they're signing autographs for children.
Yes.
And then God knows what they're getting up to. That's like, you know, God knows. I mean, it's not God knows. It's like, okay, they're just doing gay guy stuff.
They're
just doing gay guy stuff. But I actually think weirdly, like apart from the like right wing people who are outraged by it and trying to create a fury, that it's not even if those drag queens like post on Twitter, there are drag queens who like have porn. They've done pornos and they've started OnlyFans and stuff. And like, it just gets absorbed in the blob. Like, the algorithm sorts it aside, and the drag keeps going, and the fisting stuff or whatever.
I know.
Stays over here. They just don't want to see.
Wow. I mean, I could have never expected
it. Was this funny?
This was an absolute dream.
No, this was amazing.
I feel like I have so much more I want to say, but I feel like I've just been like going off.
Well, no, I just want to, I want to say that it's very nice actually to be doing this, because when we recorded first time, episode 2, I think.
Of that incarnation. Yes.
We were about to start shooting the movie, and now the movie is all done.
Wow. So
it's a nice little envelope around this period of my life. At that, on your podcast, I ruined my reputation by saying I didn't like Renaissance, volume 1. Then I came around to Renaissance. I will repeat my earlier sin by saying I am no huge fan of this latest of volume 2. And I'm sure by we record again, I will have realized that it's actually genius, and that she's actually ahead of all of us, and that it's a really great
piece of work. I do remember that era. First of all, I just want to say we're very, very proud of you, and we're so excited.
I can't wait to see the movie.
You are one of the great minds, and it is an honor to have you on our podcast twice.
Truly.
Two Timers Club.
But it was funny, that era we had truly not, we did not plan this, but somehow there were like 3 white people in a row that came on the podcast and said they didn't like Renaissance, and there was just nothing we could do about it. And we were like, well, that's what we're putting out into the world, is a series of 3 sort of like opinionated white people.
All disparaging it. John was also one of them.
John was one of them. Yeah. And by the way, I think we all had a very similar trajectory, because I also at first was sort of like, to be inundated with all the commentary on it, you lose sight of the matter at hand.
Yeah.
And now, I've said this so many times, I love it. I like listen to it often. It brings me so much joy. I think it's maybe the best thing she's ever done. I genuinely believe that. But it's wonderful that we have that on record forever.
Forever. We can correct it anytime. It won't matter. They'll turn the same blind eye.
Yeah. I want the official record of this podcast to show that I actually am very much enjoying Cowboy Carter. And I thought, I'm not just trying to appease the rabid fans. Sure. I really went in skeptical, and I listened once. I listened as hard as I could, and I said, I don't know if I'm liking this. And then I put it on sort of in the background, sort of listening a little bit less hard, and I was like, oh, I'm actually really loving this. And now it's at a point where I put it on and I'm all in.
That's great. That's wonderful.
I love that.
It's nice to like not be like, sometimes it's so comforting to be like, ugh, I'm one of the masses. Like, I don't have to like make a stink every time this comes up.
That's a very widely discussed phenomenon. yielding to that feeling, but it is a sweet, sweet feeling. And I'm sure it will be an amazing tour.
Mm-hmm.
With a full bluegrass band. Just a washboard.
A bunch of horses coming out.
A lot of horses. I do want to say, George, really quickly, I want to apologize. You know, a lot of these LA recordings, it's been 2 people in LA and just 1 George.
You're getting a taste of your own medicine. This is our first time where I am with the guest in the room and you're away. Do you not see how it has been for me?
It's hard.
George, this is so hurtful. I can't believe you lived through this and didn't complain every single time. Mm-hmm. There's something where everything I say, there's like a slight delay where I'm like, oh, I'm bombing. Yeah. I'm bombing, and they actually are mad at me. They like hate me. And I'm like, I have to say this out loud, because I was like, Theta's going to leave this recording and be like, wow, George is great. Sam is actually really quite stupid.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You're delighted. I know the position. It's a terrible position to be in.
George, you are braver than the Marines.
No. I think we are both 2 of the great gay men. Okay, we're going to put a pin in some of these, because I'm like, I need to go at some point later, you know, maybe when I see Theta later this week, I need to go back to Small versus Big. I need to go back to Shame versus Embarrassment. I need to go back to different personalities while having sex, and how dignity, and you know, I really think this is going to be an episode that gets lips a flapping. I am seeing emails coming our way. I am seeing DMs. I am seeing tags on multiple social media platforms.
Okay, wait. Maybe I have one more thing to say.
Okay, what?
I just think you can't, I think the issue is you can't escape shame no matter what. So like when we come out of the closet, we're like, okay, we're escaping our shame, but we're just trading it for a million little embarrassments.
Sure.
That's actually very well said. That's beautiful.
And so it's like, either way, it's just like, how do you want to release? How do you want to suffer? Yeah. Do you want it in small doses or in a deep, deep way?
That's exactly it. Because it really is like coming out is this weight lifted off your shoulders, or you're like, I don't have to keep this huge secret anymore.
Yeah.
But here I go ordering at the coffee shop and someone's giving me a dirty look.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I'll pick small.
Yeah. So coming out is you're using Klarna to deal with your shame in in installments.
Is when you pay in installments.
Oh, sorry.
Coming out is signing up for Klarna. You're saying I don't have the money to pay all this shame right now.
Yeah,
but I will pay it monthly.
I'm going to pay monthly installments of $4 until this $50 top is paid off.
Yeah, so, and honey, there will be interest.
It's really called, sorry, Klarna. It's a Klarna. Yeah. That sounds like a fake fantasy fiction name.
I only heard about it this year actually because I can't get into it, but I bought something that is the most expensive thing I've ever bought. And I was like, I don't have the money in my account for this. And it was like, do you want to pay an installment? So I was like, yeah, you better believe I do.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. I only know about Klarna because apparently teens were like getting in like to debt by just like, because they'd be like, oh, I can just pay an installment.
I can just buy Bottega.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So shout out to Klarna.
And speaking of shout outs, well, okay, before we go into shout outs, Theta, one more time. Stress Positions opens when?
Stress Positions opens in New York, April 19th at IFC, and then it will open in LA and other markets on April 26th.
From Neon. And go see La Chimera.
Go see La Chimera. Put more money in the pot. Go see Immaculate.
Immaculate. Yeah.
Just show up for Sydney because she has a huge hit movie right now, and she would really appreciate it if you could show up for her.
Show up for her.
And while you're at the theater, why not go see Stress Position?
Do a double feature.
Starring John Early, Amy Zimmer, me, the wonderful Kaher Harhash, and many others. John Roberts.
Mm.
Wow.
Do you think, in a sort of, if Neon were to do a multiverse, would you potentially, what if your character, and again, I have not seen the film, maybe represented Sandra Hüller for her next murder trial?
I think it'd be beautiful. They do have contractual, they don't. I actually have sequel rights for this movie. There will never be a sequel to this movie.
Well, but maybe
I do have sequel rights. They really
maybe Immaculate, Sydney Sweeney can move into the house.
Sandra Hüller, everybody could get together. You like that show Drawn Together.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Drawn Together, but it's all Neon properties. So,
well, I'm smelling dollars already.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
George, will you describe our final segment?
I would be honored and delighted to. Our final segment, Theta, is called Shoutouts. And in this segment, we pay homage to the grand straight tradition of the radio shoutout. And what better place to do that than literally overlooking Times Square? We are flanked by billboards, flashing billboards on all sides. I can only imagine they're all advertising the U.S. military. And so, you know, you sort of, you're shouting out to your friends back home. You're on Z100. You're on TRL. I think I can go first.
Yeah, I also actually came up with one when you were talking.
Oh, do you want to go first?
Actually, yeah, that could be amazing.
Go on.
Okay, what is up, freaks, losers, and needless to say, perverts around the globe? I want to give a gigantic shout out to having a lunch dessert. I do not like sweets. I have never said I like sweets. And recently, you know, life is suffering and I eat lunch and I say, if I have a little cookie after this, I will feel like I'm having a great day. So I have become one of these people that gets a little cookie after lunch and it makes me feel like a child. I'm filled with childlike wonder. It makes me feel normal in sort of, we're talking about joining the masses way. I feel like I'm one of the masses. So it makes me feel like, you know what? Why are you spending your whole life fighting? Maybe just relax for a bit and go with the damn flow. Not everything is a battle. Have a cookie after lunch and live your damn life. I'm eating sweets now. Woo!
Wow.
Shout out to sweets.
Shout out to sweets.
I love it. At lunch.
At lunch. It changes everything.
Yeah. All right. What's up, adventurers? I want to give a shout out to, you'll never believe this, doing a polar plunge in the ocean now, currently in April, when it's still cold out. I am so not the type of person who would ever do anything like this. An activity like that, I look at people doing it and I say, oh, you don't have enough excitement in your own life. You're in a loveless marriage. You're having an affair with your assistant and you don't even like her. You are absolutely, you know, you have nothing to live for. And so you're looking for places to feel alive. I was so wrong. This is one of the most amazing things I've ever done in my life. I did it for my friend Lindsay's birthday in the Rockaways. I have never felt more in community with people. We all ran into the cold water together. I was so in the moment that I swear to God, I lost my glasses in the ocean. I repeat, I lost my glasses.
That's
why I have these backup ones now. And I have to say, when I look back on it, I don't feel a sense of loss. I feel a sense of liberation. I am Aphrodite coming out of that shell. I am, you know, Splash, the mermaid from Splash coming out and gaining legs. I loved being in the cold water. I love feeling invigorated and alive with just a group of sort of gay men and women. and New York-based freelance creators, you know, the people that make up my community. So, you guys, you have like a matter of days left, honestly, by the time this episode comes out. Go to the beach, do a polar plunge, and maybe leave your glasses in the sand.
Okay, you're bad.
That's a beautiful shout out. I'm going to literally, we are in Times Square. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to shout out an abstraction. I'm going to literally shout out, yesterday I was in Times Square in peak hours having a full panic attack, like on the street, and there was nowhere to turn. I walked into a reflexology $55 massage place, and I got the most amazing massage from a wonderful, nice woman. No, nothing untoward, okay? And she's right around the corner here at Times Square. So I want to give a shout out, not just to that woman, but also to the idea of treating yourself to a massage, a walk-in massage. You can do it, especially
and it's only
falling
$55?
Apart. Well, there was tip and stuff, and they try to get you to add another 30 minutes, but whatever. I mean, say no and didn't.
I've only gotten a massage once in my life, and it was more than $55. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no, it's a
deal.
That's
how you'll get a Cobble Hill.
I've never done it.
Walk in.
I also really appreciate you saying that nothing untoward happened, because as soon as someone says they got a massage, I'm like, okay, but be honest. Like,
I know, exactly. No, nothing happened. To face down the whole time, just, you know, the pressing, then the rubbing, then the hot stone or whatever, and then a big thwack. You know how they thwack?
Ooh. You got a thwack.
You really
bottom.
Got it all for $55.
Got it all for $55.
Wow.
Wow, the variety pack.
See you at the Times Square reflexology.
I hope everything is all right with the establishment and that it's not a totally evil, dark, sinister place, but they really saved my ass yesterday.
Wow.
That's a genuine shout out.
I love that.
Well, Theta, thank you so much for doing the podcast. This has been a real treat.
It's so nice of you to have me on. I really appreciate it.
We love you, and we can't wait to see the movie, and everyone go see Stress Positions. And I should say, we haven't even said the word Nymphowars. Listen to Nymphowars, Theta's podcast with past, also two-timer, Macy Rodman.
It's a two, we have two-timers.
Yeah. two-timers every one podcast.
Every Wednesday.
Wow.
And, you know, if I can for a second, I want to give a special shout-out to the recent two-part episode about the storytelling convention. Oh, that really got me.
Oh, that's nice.
Really got me. And it harkened back to the two-part Drag Race.
Oh.
Of course.
So iconic.
We'll never live it down. We'll never get there.
Oops. Okay. All right. Bye, guys.
Okay, bye.
Podcast ends now. Want more? Subscribe to our Patreon for two extra episodes a month, Discord access, and more by heading to patreon.com/StradioLab.
And for all our visual learners, free full-length video episodes are available on our YouTube.
Now get back to work.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.